You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and following my interview with Mike Mignola a couple of weeks ago, tonight I'm talking to Duncan Fegredo, the artist Mignola has chosen to replace himself as the regular illustrator of the comic Hellboy, and I'm talking to him and his collaborator Sean Phillips about their book Intersections, which, like their conversation, sees each artist begin and end each other's string of ideas. Sean has drawn superhero and horror comics such as Hellblazer and Marvel Zombies. I'm talking to Sean Phillips and Duncan.
Nice to see you here again.
Fegredo,
who cares?
You say, tomato.
As long as it's not Frodo. We don't need that.
While Sean is constructing a diorama of Marvel Zombies, why don't we start with the project that the two of you have done together? How did Intersections come about?
Do you want me to take that? You're too busy with your damn figures, aren't you? He's playing with his Marvel Zombies figures, if you want to know. Okay, I think it was Bristol 2005. Talking about it?
Years ago. A lot of artists put out conventionally sketchbooks. You know, small little, it used to be like photocopy, A5 little booklets of sketches and stuff. And we thought, we can do better than that. We can do something really stupid. We could print full colour book.
Started out smaller, didn't it? But the thing was, we were having...
Inspired by Event Horizon, Liam Sharp's book just came out, and we thought, we could do a bit like that, but without the barbarians, obviously, because that's a stupid idea.
No barbarians. This is going to be art. And this is also because we were having a drink and a curry, and this is why the whole piece on the back, the whole conceived over a fine, whatever it was, fine repast of Nouvelle Cuisine and fine wines or whatever. So we were having curry and beer, and our ideas got grander and grander. And this sort of started with the idea of flip books, and we ended up with huge coffee table books. And then we came to our senses a little bit.
It would cost so much to make, because originally we were going to self-publish, you know, print up 1,000 copies, which I think is extremely optimistic that we'd ever get rid of 1,000 copies or 2,000 copies, however many it took to get a decent print cost. And, you know, even if we just ended up with 999 copies under each of our beds, it wouldn't matter because we'd get a nice book out of it and we'd have had fun doing it. But
making money, was it?
Made any money on it. We never will, I don't think. It was just, you know, we wanted to do some work together, so yeah, sort of, we just did it. And in the end, Image published it because I was drawing Marvel Zombies at the time, and Robert Kirkman, who wrote that, is big in Image with Walking Dead, and I showed him some pictures from the book, and he showed Eric Stevenson, the head of Image. Eric says, "Oh yeah, we'll publish that," and that was as easy as it was.
Well, actually, a common theme that I've come up with a few of the guests that I've talked to this weekend is that Image is actually starting off as a slightly absurd superhero company, has now become like the indie darling, where they publish some of the most interesting comics on the market.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, because all the things that they publish, the way their publishing program is set up, because they don't pay any money up front, everything's back end, the people that are prepared to work for no money are the people that are really, you know, desperate to get their stuff out on paper. So I think, you know, you can't help but attract the creators that, you know, you get, in exchange for no money, you get total creative freedom.
There seem to be a fair number of books about comics artists coming out these days. Do you think finally comics artists are being appreciated as artists in their own right?
Well, it depends who buys those books, because if only comic fans buy them, then doesn't really achieve it. I mean, that's all I buy. I don't buy comics anymore. I buy books about comics or books about comic artists. It's great.
What's your artistic training? I mean, did you come from a sort of fine art background?
I started drawing comics professionally when I was 15. I used to draw girls' comics, Bunty and Judy and stuff like that. So I never really had that, you know, the struggle that most people do. I just sort of fell into it really easily. But I still went to art college. I did graphic design rather than anything. No, because if you went to college to do fine art, you'd never ever get a job. And my dad says, well, you're not doing, you know, if you're going to college, then you're going to do something you can actually get a job at the end of it. So I did graphic design, which I think it was good for me because it still informs quite a lot of the stuff I do. I know how to, it was in the days before computers, so I know how to set type and mark up artwork and how printing works and stuff like that. So that has definitely helped. But it wasn't art, it was just design.
Yeah, speaking as someone who studied art at Goldsmiths and then worked in video shops for 5 years, what's your artistic training, Duncan?
My artistic training? I did the usual thing. I did A-levels, O-level, A-level art, foundation in art, and then I went on to do graphic design at Leeds Polytechnic. Specialised in illustration, tried to do some comics, and they didn't like that an awful lot at all. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Actually, yeah, my final project was I did Paradise Lost, and I illustrated Paradise Lost in 30 paintings. Well, they're ink drawings, kind of Stedman-esque, and I did it with robots. Robots in Hell.
I'd pay to see that, actually.
It was supposed to be published at the time. That was the idea. The college was going to do it, but they were really crap. What did I expect?
You both studied graphic design then. A lot of modern graphics, both in advertising and in various other media, seem to have been heavily influenced by comics in recent years. Have you sort of noticed that yourselves, or has the graphic background made it easier to sort of construct pages at the very least?
I think that sort of innate design sense, is you don't think about it when you do it. You know, I often get told that my stuff is nicely designed in the layout of the page, but it just comes naturally. You don't think about it. It's always the way about talking about how did you draw that? Why did you do this? Well, you did it because that was the right thing to do. You don't sit around articulating it and thinking about how you did it and why you did it. I don't know. I mean, it's being visually aware in general. I think, you know, it should inform every part of your life, not just the drawing the comic bit. You know.
Yeah, I think Sean's essentially right there. I mean, when you are composing an image on a page, you do tend to. It is design, yeah, but I mean, you're using everything you've seen that you like from the things outside of comic shows. You're using classical art, just good solid composition, which is one of those things. I think you can kind of learn it, you can, but I think there's like it tends to come more naturally to some than others. I'm assuming that because looking at a lot of work that's out there, it's sadly lacking, and I'm not going to name names.
I find quite helpful about having the graphic design background is that on the book I do now on Criminal, I do the whole package. I do the logo, I design the text pages, I direct the colourist, decide every visual aspect of the book. And if I didn't have that background, I don't think I'd know how to make a logo or how to get it ready for press or things like that.
So what's your relationship with the writer then when you've got such creative control, right?
Well, he writes it and I draw it. That's, you know, we leave each other alone to do our separate jobs. He obviously has his opinion. I know, for example, in Criminal, on the trade paperbacks and in a lot of the design, there's a particularly florid font, like a hand-drawn script type font. And I know Ed hates that and would like us to change it, but it's set now as the default font for the trades, and it's going to be there forever unless I can think of a really good reason to do it differently. I like the idea of hopefully we're going to get, you know, 10 different Criminal trade paperbacks out, and each one will have that unifying trade gist, so they all match, and when they're up on a shelf, all 10 spines match, because I'd really hate it on series of books when they don't. Things like Marvel Essentials keep changing their bloody spines, and on the shelf it just looks terrible now. And yeah.
In your comics work, you've both done paintings and more traditional drawn work. Is it just that different projects suggest a different medium? Periods of your art where you feel, actually, I'd like to do a bit more painting this year?
The brutal answer to that is if someone offers you a cover and then they say, a painted cover, it just pays a load more, basically. So if that's the first thing. And it's an for me, I remember it as being an opportunity to learn to paint. So it's kind of like being... It sounds pretty bad, I suppose. Yeah, paid to learn. But it's kind of weird because you're doing one cut. If you've got a run of covers, you're learning one painting at a time over a 12-month period. It is kind of a weird way to do it. But, I don't know. You could just do different things in paint. I mean, but it's how... Yeah.
I started doing mainstream work, even though I've been doing the girl stuff, and we both started with 2018 in Crisis. Painted art was the way to do it, because printing, all of a sudden comics got printed better and they wanted painted art, and that was, you didn't have the choice really, you did painted art because that's what the editors wanted. And since then it's become very expensive to get painted art out of people, because obviously it takes a hell of a lot longer, and also even if they paid well, the story's really got to be good to make you want to spend 2 years painting it.
It's a question of does a story really warrant being painted? What does it really gain by it at the end of the day? Actually, what Sean said about comics, it literally was just literally as we finished college, wasn't it? When they turned to painted, and I'd spent all my time in college in the end, the last years particularly, doing black and white work because I didn't learn to paint while I was at college. I could do it a bit, kind of. I could.
It was in that particular issue of Crisis. And
yeah. Don't search it out. But the thing was,
it was black and white artwork coloured in, and then I saw how badly it printed and how awful it was. And also, I'd been into the offices and I'd seen Duncan's work hanging on the wall and Bisley's stuff, and I think, shit, I'm gonna have to learn to paint. And like that next week, on the next time I did a comics page, it was proper painting, and then you sort of learn on the job. And
when I saw that, I was like, where the hell's that come from? It's like,
saying, you know, when I took the pages in, like, oh, that's a bit different than what we weren't expecting that, but in a good way.
I take it then that you guys have been friends for years and have sort of compared and contrasted art as you've sort of gone along.
We met at the Crisis launch party, didn't we? But I actually don't remember you. Weren't you? Yeah, and I was... And I was sort of being starry with that. It's Grant Morrison, it's so-and-so. And, you know, it's just kind of freaky, it was, really. But we actually met properly first time, actually, when we were both delivering artwork in Fleetway.
Was that day?
Good, so.
We both happened to turn up at the offices delivering stuff, and basically he was bringing in some painted Slayton pages, and we were going through the drawer while he was taking the piss out of our stuff. We were like, you know, going gaga over his. We went down the pub with him, got quite drunk, and then went out into town for the afternoon. And since then, we like each other's work, we like each other, and it definitely, and also we've got quite a lot
at the time, didn't it? We looked at the same stuff
by the same people. We liked the same sort of other art, and it informs our work. And also, it's good to have someone to compete against a little bit.
Yeah. It was kind of competitive, but it was more that it was kind of inspiring that somebody else could talk to and who was developing at the same time. Sean was miles ahead, though.
College atmosphere of like being in a room with like-minded people, and you sort of spur each other on and you want to do good stuff. And it was a bit of a continuation of that. It doesn't really happen with anybody else. I mean, there's other people in comics that I've known almost as long, maybe, but it's not the same, Duncan.
We know each other well enough to know that we like similar stuff, and we can bitch about the same things. You know, I'm not going to name names again now, am I?
As you're playing with the model of one of Sean's zombies.
Yeah. Is his leg supposed to come off?
Is it just
good? Because I was hoping you hadn't noticed. I'd pulled it off.
You both actually ended up doing horror work within kind of the superhero milieu, that you're doing Hellboy now, and Sean's doing Marvel Zombies. With Hellboy, it was a bit of a different proposition. You had to sort of start off doing it in a more sort of Mignola-esque style. Has that then lent you to make it more Fegredo-ish as the series progressed?
It's an interesting one. It was actually my choice more at the beginning. I'd done an interview a few years back where I got asked what my dream job would be, and I said at the time that Hellboy was that would be the thing, but I didn't want to do it because you want Mignola to draw it. And to my mind, it's like the only Hellboy that's worked so far out of obviously his run and all those other short stories and the Weird Tales and everything. Mike's was the only one that Mike's work obviously is Hellboy, and things that veered away too much. I don't know. It's not just about artistic style. It's about the way the panels are laid out, the way the storytelling is handled.
Design aspects again, isn't it?
Yeah. Every time you removed one of these keystones, it just became that much weaker. Okay, that's pushing it. I know you're in an arch, you only get one keystone, but you know what I mean. Everything that differed made it a weaker proposition. So I kind of. In the first issue particularly, I made pains to actually, for the sake of continuity as much as anything else, like keep within Mike's the realm of Mike's style. There are certain things, certain graphic devices that Mike has used, which I'll actually always keep in. And in fact, it's not really a recent thing necessarily, because I've actually used it in the past. He's one of those guys that that has always been an influence. We've talked about this in the past as well, haven't we, Sean? But things we both really liked, and like, yeah, I'm now, this is going to,
those 2 hour phone conversations where we're dissecting like the latest Hellboy issue, and like, look what he's done there, that's new, that isn't it, oh we'll do that too, oh that's great.
Yeah, you want to learn from this. It's kind of like, it's like whenever you see anything you like, it's kind of like I really like this, is there anything there that I can use? And this is not like I want to rip this off, it's like how can what this guy is doing
and how, yeah,
you know, what can I learn from this? And the problem was, I mean, as soon as we started, I mean, there was a period when we were both doing this, and we noticed little things in each other's works. Like, you can't do that. That's far too Mignola-esque. And so you sort of pull back a bit. But now I'm in the position where it's kind of like, well, I can do it. Mike doesn't want anybody to do a copy of his work anyway, though. This is the thing. I can do it, and it's actually the difficult thing is not actually making it go too far. So now I'm just trying to straddle. But straddle the 2 things. Keep the atmosphere right. Keep it feeling like Hellboy without copying it. As long as it feels right, but still keep my own sense of personality in there. I've had to rein some of my excesses in just simply because it doesn't fit in Mike's world. Mike likes things to be very quiet and sedate until they go boom, literally. So that's. Forced a little sobriety. Absolutely, yeah. Someone's going to fall through the floor. Something's going to go off big time anyway. So yeah, it's a conscious decision. But as I've gone through, as I've reached the end of the 6th issue, it's certainly reached a place where it's more my own thing without relying quite so heavily on Mike's. But it'll always be there because it's Hellboy.
I mean, the horror comic that you're doing is also, in a lot of respects, a black comedy as well. The fact that it's the idea of recognisable superhero characters who are all eating each other.
That's right. I mean, I don't really see it as a horror at all. It is, like you say, it's a comedy. But I see it... What I enjoy of it is a bit of a nostalgia fest. I see it as being, like, what I liked about early Marvel stuff. So all the characters are wearing their 60s versions of their costumes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I have done other horror, but I'm not really into it particularly. I mean, I've never seen a zombie film, apart from Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead, but that's not zombies, is it? And the zombie bits, I didn't get most of the jokes because I haven't seen Night of the Living Dead or any of those sorts of things.
The kind of projects that you've worked on, you've done various comics for companies that are associated with superheroes, but, for example, your run on Wildcats was more like... was more like something like the West Wing, you know. So it's almost like you take superheroes and then transport them to a different genre. I mean, do you like superhero comics, or do you like the opportunity to take superhero comics but then turn them into something different?
I think I grew up loving superhero comics,
right.
You know. And I don't, the stuff when I've done drawn superheroes, they haven't quite been like how they're meant to be. That's usually the writer, and also just the way I draw things is just, you know. Before I did any superheroes, I'd done 10 years of Vertigo comics, and I'd just learned to draw differently to how superhero comics are put together. I mean, I don't see myself subverting them or anything.
In a way, they should probably actually encourage artists to work on different genres before they come to superheroes, because you see so many people breaking into the industry desperate to draw Batman and Spider-Man.
But that's all they can draw. Batman flexing his muscles. They can't draw...
real people or real places.
Or... sat behind the wheel of a car, or that's the thing that definitely annoys me about that sort of generic superhero stuff, is that all they're interested in is the hero bit or the monsters, or no one wants to draw the talking head pages, which are the ones I like drawing. The superhero stuff when they're fighting and flying stuff, that freaks me out drawing that, because I find it because it's so alien to how I approach making a comic. But give me 10 pages, 2 people in a room talking, I can draw that and make that look quite interesting.
Well, actually, I own all the art for a Spider-Man backup strip that you did of Mysterio.
Ah, did you? I remember. I mean, that was quite a weird one. There wasn't much Spider-Man in it. You probably don't want to know that, but I drew it over the weekend because it was a real rush deadline job.
I don't feel I should answer that question.
It was a bargain, I'm sure. I can't remember. Yeah, I mean, that was great because I was in a... Because it was a backup in Spider-Man, in Amazing Spider-Man, and John Byrne was writing and drawing the front half of the book, and I did the 6 pages of the back. And I was thinking, I mean, there's a comic that John Byrne's in, and I'm sure that when he got his comp copies of that, he just like, what's this in the back of here? And threw that away. So, but I feel that someone I grew up reading. I absolutely loved his stuff when I was a kid. When he was not X-Men in particular, I wasn't really into that, but when he was drawing Marvel Team Up Spider-Man, that's Spider-Man to me, the way he used to do it.
Any superhero comic love that you want to get off your chest?
I have more. It's more of a nostalgia for stuff I used to like. I mean, Ditko's run on Spider-Man, those sort of things. The beginnings of the X-Men with Kirby, Fantastic Four, anything like that. I loved them when I was a kid, and it's what I thought I wanted to do, but. It's that thing when we got in. What did we end up doing? We ended up working in Crisis and what else? Oh, Vertigo. How could I forget? So you end up drawing guys and girls in jeans and t-shirts, and I found I actually really enjoyed doing that. Relatively, I like the character stuff and all the big stuff. I have no interest in drawing for the most part, or not like that anyway. There's a certain moment where I just didn't feel comfortable with the skin tight costumes. I'm not got anything against it or anything, but it's just, I guess it's just like a moment sort of past for me. And I mean, now we're doing Hellboy. That's the nearest thing I'll do anything like that with. I mean, I can do the Kirby thing in there if I want to. Actually, I did enjoy doing the Marvel team. It wasn't a Marvel team. That's exactly how I think of it. The Marvel Monsters. That's where I was doing my slight Kirby thing. Yeah. Kirby meets the Grader, which I'm sure he wouldn't have wanted to, but.
Well, that would be an intersection again.
yeah. Well, that's it. That's exactly it. Yeah. So I can kind of do that sort of thing in Hellboy, but I don't tend to think of Hellboy as being in the same realm.
When you have done the more sort of the fantasy comics like Kid Eternity, you've written you've had the script written by writers like Grant Morrison and Peter Milligan on Enigma. They sort of approach that kind of subject matter with a more sort of surrealist bent, and your art kind of has a strong sort of sense of caricature to it, which seems to be a good fit.
I mean that really worked. I don't know how much I got to comment back onto Kid Eternity. That was just that's kind of a blur of learning how not to paint comics, actually, as much as anything. If it worked, it's kind of in spite of, I don't know, I can't remember that. Pete's stuff, I mean, his tone, the voices of his character actually really suited me down to the ground, and it kind of really made me want to make everything on the page live up to what he did. It's kind of like I could hear his dialogue, and I wanted to make the characters I was drawing give a performance that matched to it. That's where my stuff really started to develop. I mean, aside of the fact that in Enigma I actually learned to draw again. It's kind of crazy. I don't know how, painted a whole load of stuff and drawn a whole load of stuff before that, but it's kind of like all of a sudden I really learned how to draw.
Good characters make you realise that you like drawing the characters acting. It's the act, and I find the same thing, it's getting them to seem like real people, even though obviously they're not real.
They're actually, the performance is there. It's kind of what Sean was saying about the composition earlier. It's kind of like you're looking at it, you read the script, you're looking at the paper, and you see it in your head, and it's the only way it can be. And it's kind of like when you read the dialogue, it demands a certain performance. You're looking for a flow on a page, and you can see it playing out. And especially if there's nothing else going on, you want to make something out of it. How are you going to keep people's... You know, if you've got a whole load of exposition, well, I wouldn't say exposition, a whole load of just talking heads, you want to try and make the characters give a performance to make it so that you are not just filling space for dialogue to be hung on. What are you going to do with it? Which is why so many comics seem to fall flat when people they get to draw those scenes, and it's kind of like headshot, 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 headshot. It's dull. It's dull. So you want to move the character around, change angles, just really explore the expressions without pantomiming it too much. It's given a performance. Make it seamless.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that when you're talking about that, you're using a lot of the terminology of filmmaking. I mean, as a comics artist, presumably,
easy to explain to the non-comic reader or the non-comic creator, in terms that people understand.
But I was going to say, I mean, do you look to film and TV at all for at least suggestions of how to maybe frame Images on the page, camera angles, and acting performances.
You know. You see something memorable on the screen, at some point it's going to stick in your psyche somewhere. And you'll recall it. I mean, I have watched stuff and thought, that is something that I'd like to do. It's just having the recall to actually find, you know, to actually use that. But yeah, I mean, I suppose I do tend to think in terms of film. I mean, I know that I'm fully aware of all the difference there are between comics and films, but at the same time, there are things that are useful. It's interesting. I was talking to Mike Mignola about it earlier, and he was making a big deal of how everybody thinks in terms of filming comics, whereas, in fact, he actually said, there was a guy who said, looking at his artworks and looking at his panel progression, he said, you can't do this. These guys are reversing. You've broken the 180 rule. And Mike said, what the hell is that? It's a comic.
You were talking about this earlier, saying how Mike... His stuff is quite not stage bound, but it's more like watching a play. The good way, like you say, well, it's not pantomime, but it's acting to the back of the hall rather than, you know, the close up stuff that you get, you know, in a film where you see every twitch. You can't do that subtle stuff that you can do on a 30-foot high cinema screen where, you know, someone raises an eyebrow, because you're dealing with much broader, unless you've got a very, very anal style. But you haven't got the motion, so you can't do that little change. It has to be something where you can get it all across in a much, you know, broader, not, you know, almost pantomime way.
I mean, it's interesting as well that someone complained about the 180 rule, because that, in a way, that suggests that their knowledge of cinema is just kind of based on the mainstream rather than sort of more experimental film, you know.
I think that's true. I mean, what they've also got to be aware of is there are other things. I mean, film can cheat things. No, and I mean, if you get talking heads in film, chances are, I'm sure you've noticed it. You can cut back and forward as much as you like from one character, you know, go over the shoulder shots or whatever. And the thing is, it has sound as well. So the images are linked by sound, whereas the equivalent in a comic speech balloons, it doesn't work the same way, doesn't, because apart from anything else, it can work the same way, I should say, but the limitation of that is the fact that you have a physical thing occupying space in the panel. Sometimes for reasons just a balloon placement, you are forced into doing something you don't necessarily want to do, and it's often because the writer's written something in such a way that if you have talk back in a panel, cross talk, you are forced to arrange the figures in such a way that might be deemed unnatural, you know, in a film. Actually, having said that, I've thought of something else. Have you ever noticed when you're watching a film, when you have a bunch of people talking on screen, take a moment to step back and look at the way they're actually arranged on the screen, and you see they're all standing in a row for some bizarre reason. But anyway, yeah, it's sometimes it's physical necessity on the page. Did I answer that?
Yes,
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think you got to the gist. You know?
Yeah, I was kind of shooting around there, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any influences outside the art world?
I don't think conscious influence, like Duncan said, you know, everything you've ever seen, you take in. And
for example, looking at, say, your Hellraiser run, there seems to be like a sort of strong film noir thing going on.
Because I did a few issues of Hellblazer when I first started out, but I came back and did a long run. And the first issue of the long run, I had a book on film noir. Because I'd come from doing Kid Eternity, and my style had got quite, not cartoony, but very simplified, sort of almost animated type feel to it.
You bent yourself completely, I remember that.
So because the Hellblazer as a book was totally different. So
some pages, didn't you?
I found this book on film noir with the shadows and the Venetian blinds and all that stuff. I thought, well, I've got to have to start putting more black on my work. It's got to have shadows and stuff because it's a horror book. It's got to be darker. And I drew the first four pages out with brush, how I'd been drawing Kid Eternity before that. And then I had to go and redraw the whole lot in a scratchy pen line because the brush just was too soft looking. It didn't, you know, make seem horror. No.
Change, but it was one for the better, definitely.
You know, and it's always like that. The story influences the direction you choose, you know. The way I was drawn before wouldn't have suited the Hellblazer. I mean, it would have been still, you know, darker than it was, but it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have, you know, fitted it quite as well.
It was softer, yeah.
And it's always the way, you know, the story always comes first. Whatever you do on the page has to serve the story. Yeah. it's the way to make the writer look better, fix all their mistakes, and make it easier to read and look good.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
For more info about tonight's show and to download the podcast of my conversation with Sean and Duncan, please visit www.panelborders.com. And to leave feedback, please click on the link marked blog. On next week's show, Duncan Knott and myself will be talking to Charlie Adelard, another British artist like Sean Phillips who draws in a characteristic scratchy style and has found recent fame drawing zombies. And that's at the same time next week.